WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Rain continues to cause flooding concerns after Helene walloped our area, especially southwestern Virginia, on Friday. Shenandoah County's school board argues in court to dismiss an NAACP lawsuit against its decision to revert to Confederate school names. And Virginia boasts it has one of the lowest recidivism rates in the nation, but some experts say that's meaningless. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, September 30th. WHSV reports that in our area, eastern Augusta County was the hardest hit by Tropical Storm Helene on Friday. With an already saturated ground and 3 to 5 inches of rain across the eastern side of the county, rivers and creeks overflowed. Numerous water rescues took place throughout the day, and residents in the Sharando, Creekside, and Back Creek areas were asked to evacuate. But it was southwestern Virginia that took the brunt of the storm in the Commonwealth. The Virginia Mercury reports that in Craig County, one person was killed by a building collapse from a falling tree. As of Monday morning, more than 88,000 residents in southwestern Virginia are still without power. That's according to poweroutage.us. And there's still no power for almost all of the 10,000 customers in Grayson County. Much of the southwestern part of the state received more than 5 inches of rain Friday, but the Grayson Highlands along the North Carolina border reportedly got more than 12 inches on Friday. From southwestern Virginia into the Shenandoah Valley, numerous secondary roads are still closed due to flooding and downed trees or power lines. The Shenandoah County School Board argued in court Friday for dismissing a lawsuit by the NAACP after the board reinstated two Confederate school names earlier this year. WMRA's Bridget Manley reports.
The Shenandoah County School Board filed the motion to dismiss last July after being sued by 5 students and the NAACP in June. The board had made national news for reverting the names back to their former Confederate names. In 2020, the school board voted to change the names of Stonewall Jackson High School and Ashby Lee Elementary School to Mountain View High School and Honey Run Elementary School. The lawsuit alleges that by reverting to the Confederate names, the school board violated the students' First Amendment and 14th Amendment rights, as well as their statutory rights under the Equal Educational Opportunities Act and Title IX of the Civil Rights Act. The lawsuit relies on the historical context in which Stonewall Jackson High School was built and named during a period of massive resistance in Virginia, following the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Brown versus the Board of Education, which outlawed segregation. Marcia Plater, one of the plaintiff's attorneys, cited this historical context during the hearing, and also the statements made by the Shenandoah County board members when they first decided to change the school names in 2020. The board members acknowledged that naming the schools to honor Confederate generals had conveyed racially discriminatory messages. Plater argued that the 2020 acknowledgement should be sufficient to prevent the dismissal of the case and allow for discovery, as the harm caused by the names was foreseeable.
Several members of the school board said at the time that the reason they were doing it was because the original school names were discriminatory. The reason they were doing it was because they reflected a legacy of discrimination and segregation.
Ryan Downer is the legal director at the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs. Following the hearing, he reiterated the school board's 2020 statements as cause to proceed.
So to have the same defendant 4 years later revert to those school names, I think we have made the argument that the reversion to that pre-2020 state was essentially embracing the legacy and the history of segregation that the original school names represent.
Much of the lawsuit claims that students' rights would be violated while participating in school activities. According to the plaintiffs, students wearing uniforms bearing Confederate names would have their rights violated, and those who refused to comply would face harassment or lose educational opportunities. Jim Gwynn, attorney for the school board, called those complaints speculative. He said a Google search of Stonewall Jackson uniforms showed nothing Confederate about them, and none of the plaintiffs had suffered harm due to the name change. Gwynn also asserted that he didn't think that by playing a sport, players would be promoting the ideas of Stonewall Jackson, making note of other schools, like Duke and Carnegie Mellon, named for people with problematic histories. Attorney Lee Reed, also representing the plaintiffs, disagreed, saying that while the name Stonewall Jackson doesn't appear on the football uniforms, it does appear on the cheerleading uniforms. Reed also argued that students are associated with Stonewall Jackson by virtue of playing on the team, scoring points, and winning games. Gwynn also argued that the democratic process, in which the public voted in members to do the will of the people, was successful. Reed also disputed that argument, saying individual rights are still protected even when people vote for change. The Reverend Cozy Bailey is the president of the Virginia NAACP. He expressed optimism following the hearing.
I think that the intensity and depth of the questions that the judge was asking was very good because it helped to tease out, you know, all of the details and I believe the weight of what it is that this suit has. And so from that standpoint, you know, I am optimistic. I won't make any predictions, but I'm very optimistic of what his decision will be.
U.S. District Judge Michael Urbanski said he would issue a written decision on the motion to dismiss, quote, as soon as I can. If the case is not dismissed, the trial against the school board will begin in July 2025. For WMRA News, I'm Bridget Manley.
Listen to WMRA's four-part series on the history of massive resistance in Virginia and the legacy of the Shenandoah County Confederate school names. It's called Embattled Legacies. You'll also find all our reporting on this case. That's all at WMRA.org and on the app. Even though Virginia averted a fiscal cliff that would have resulted in thousands of children losing access to subsidized childcare this summer, there's a new problem now. The money allocated to pay for subsidized slots has run out, leaving thousands on a wait list for care. Megan Pauley with VPM News reports.
Between July and September, about 10,000 kids were added to a wait list for subsidized childcare in the Commonwealth. In a recent presentation to state lawmakers, Jenna Conway, who's in charge of early childhood education for the state, said the wait list indicates increased parental demand for full-day programs.
Many of them have already found a spot. They just can't afford it without the child care subsidy, without the voucher.
Conway said the wait list is also impacting the supply of new slots, with some care providers who'd previously planned to expand access now hesitant to do so. Peak Childhood Center in Hampton is one of those providers and worries it won't be able to open a new center in Newport News at full capacity next year if the wait lists remain.
Megan Pauley reporting. Senator Mark Warner is working with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on a bill to help preserve hardwood trees in Virginia and Kentucky. The trees are important for the production of furniture and spirits. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
White oak is a key ingredient for bourbon because wooden barrels are used to age the spirit and give it a distinctive color and flavor. But a shortage of the tree is causing a problem for the bourbon industry and the furniture industry, which also relies on hardwood. Virginia State Forester Robert Farrell says the acorns need sunlight to grow, but it's being blocked by other trees.
We need to do some thinning in our forests, which isn't the most economical way to manage the forest. So a lot of landowners are not enthusiastic about doing the work that needs to be done in the forest. Basically, we need to cut a lot of the understory and smaller, less valuable trees out of the forest, leaving our more valuable trees in place.
Enter Senator Mark Warner. He's part of a bipartisan group of senators working to give new incentives to landowners to preserve Virginia's upland oak forests. Warner, a Democrat, is working with Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, which relies on barrels made of white oak.
And if bourbon can bring us together, let's make it happen.
He says support from the top leadership in the Senate will probably help this legislation get attached to the Farm Bill or one of the other end-of-year packages that are expected on the Senate calendar in the next few months. I'm Michael Pope.
And finally today, Virginia's Department of Corrections issued a press release last week boasting that it had achieved one of the lowest recidivism rates in the nation. That's a measure of how many people were released from prison and were convicted of another crime during the next 3 years. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman spoke with some experts on the subject who say the claim is misleading and probably meaningless.
Virginia is reporting its lowest recidivism rate in more than 20 years, tied with Minnesota for the second lowest in the nation. But Professor Jeffrey Butts at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York is not impressed.
Just claiming that my recidivism rate is lower than yours is a ridiculous contest. It tells me nothing about overall public safety.
That's because states calculate recidivism in different ways over different periods of time. Some count arrests over a 1 or 2 year period after release. Others track over 3 years and rely on convictions. And many send people back to prison for parole violations.
So, interesting fact about Virginia is it doesn't have parole.
That's Sean Bushway, a professor of criminal justice with the University at Albany. A few people in this state are still eligible for parole, but Bushway says very few are getting it. In other states which have parole, people are being released and supervised.
Then it's easier to go back to prison if you're supervised than if you're not.
The director of Virginia's Department of Corrections believes our low rate of recidivism is a sign that the Commonwealth is a leader in the field of corrections. But it could also be that this state locks up more people for nonviolent crimes. Again, Professor Jeffrey Butts.
The one way I could guarantee you to have a low recidivism rate is to arrest a lot of people for trivial offenses.
Those folks are just less likely to commit future crimes. Long sentences could also explain low recidivism in this state. Take Keith Hill, for example. He's in prison for conspiracy to steal a shipment of cigarettes from a warehouse in Roanoke. At the time, he was working two jobs and was lured by the promise of easy money. Instead, he was sentenced to 60 years. Now he's part of a trend here and nationwide, an aging prison population that Sean Bushway says is less likely to break the law on release.
The recidivism rates across the country have been declining. And the primary reason for that is that the population of people in prisons are older and they just do not recidivate at the same rate.
And finally, Bushway read the fine print. Getting past the press release, he studied the Department of Corrections full report and noted this detail.
Differences in reconviction rates may be the result of court delays due to closures and operating at limited capacities during the COVID-19 pandemic.
In other words, the current statistic is based on arrests and sentencing in 2019, 2020, and 2021, a time when courts were not processing as many people, and judges were sending fewer defendants into crowded prisons where they might catch what could be a deadly disease. Virginia's Secretary of Public Safety concluded a recidivism rate of 19% shows the state is working hard to keep Virginia safe. But again, Jeff Butts says a low rate of recidivism doesn't always equate to safety.
People would be surprised to know that overall, less than half of all crimes actually end up being reported to the police. Let's say you had something stolen from your house. You have to judge which is more annoying, to pay to replace the thing that was stolen or to call the police and sit through that discussion and possibly end up in a court hearing. A lot of times people would rather just deal with the loss and move on.
Whatever the reason for Virginia's low rate of recidivism, experts agree there are some surefire ways to reduce the number of people heading back to prison after release, helping them to get good jobs, find secure housing, and support in their communities. I'm Sandy Houseman.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Monday.